Good evening and welcome to Shattered Lives. This is Donna R. Gore, a.k.a. Lady Justice, and we here at the Shattered Lives radio show are so excited to welcome you to this unique show, taking you beyond the details of the crime and the perpetrator and getting to the heart of what crime victim families experience and what they need in the aftermath of the crime. Prior to each show, please go to www.donnagore.com or imaginepublicity.com to read the background of the case or organization featured the week before our show is aired. And please don't forget, in case you can't listen between 5 and 6 Eastern Time, you can listen using our archival feature at any time, anywhere, all of the time. Just look for the big red heart with the cracks. And good evening, everyone. Welcome to Shattered Lives once again. This is Donna, Lady Justice, and we welcome you to this show. We try to educate, inform, exchange ideas and resources, and we have fun. And always, always, we're respectful and passionate about all things relating to crime victimization, particularly the aftermath of crime. And I'm very excited tonight because I have a very special guest. But before I get to introduce her, I have a couple of things to cover here. First of all, let me just let you know that I have shows lined up through the end of October, some very intriguing, very interesting guests. So be sure and check out the schedule, and we try to announce. And so that I don't forget, I'll just say right here and now, next week we have Addie Carone, the mom of Peter Carone, who was killed in the 80s by Adam Zak, the fugitive that was on the lam in Mexico, and not too long ago captured and incarcerated after over 20 years. So that's going to be a very good show. What can I say about myself? You know, I write prolifically, blogs primarily. I consult. I do specialty presentations. I'm committed to working with crime victims and all types of special projects. And I'm also looking for alternate employment within crime victimization area of endeavor. So all of you people out there, please do go to my website, get in touch with Delilah, and we'll talk. And I also want to put in a plug, our dear, dear friend and mentor, Susan Murphy Milano, national domestic violence, intimate partner homicide expert, is in a bad way these days. Although she's conquering a mountain, she has acquired stage 4 cancer, and all of us as a team are trying to help her. She is getting better through the means of holistic and traditional medicine, but the medical bills are astronomical, and we've set up a special website, www.conqueringcancer.me, and you can go there, you can read the beautiful blog that Delilah created, and you can also donate in a number of different ways, purchase her books, the evidentiary abuse affidavit, and her upcoming autobiography, Holding My Hand Through Hell. There's a number of options there, so please do try and help Susan. So, to the matter at hand this evening, Delilah, I'm very excited to have two skilled media people here. Delilah, the president of Imagine Publicity, who specializes in social media marketing and also a number of other services, including knowing how to host your own radio show. But I have to say, Delilah is a humanitarian. She has helped all of us, particularly Susan, in this time of tragedy. And I just have to say that I'm so proud to be affiliated with this company, and I'm so proud to be associated with her. And thank you so much, Delilah, for helping me with this show and being my co-host. Good evening.
Oh, thank you for having me and putting up with me every week, Donna.
Oh, you know, it's my pleasure. You know, I don't know what I'd do without you, and I mean that in all sincerity.
Thank you so much for mentioning Susan's website. We together are not looking at this as a tragedy, and I just want listeners to know this, that there is a remarkable amount of hope. There is a remarkable amount of confidence that she is, in recovery. She does because I'm right here with her, I can give firsthand account for anyone who wants to know or who's listening. You know, she's making progress every day. She's getting stronger every day. She has good days, bad days, but, you know, that's to be expected. And I think once this is all water under the bridge and she gets back in the saddle again, people are going to be very surprised at the new energy that comes from Susan Murphy Milano.
Well, we look forward to that, and I know that there's some other project on the horizon, and I say, you know, that's wonderful, because she has done her due diligence for over 20 years, and now it's time to get reward in other ways and for her to put herself first. So I hope she's listening, and I hope all her fans are listening, and they'll try to help. Now, without further ado, let's get to our special guest, another media person, and Ann Baldwin. I first met Ann Baldwin a couple of years ago when I was doing a special event at work for state government, and she was very kind to attend, and she was very encouraging. She officially is the CEO of Baldwin Media Marketing, and that's a public relations firm based in Connecticut. Prior to that, she had 15 years in television news business as well as radio. She started out in Cheyenne, Wyoming before coming to Connecticut. She was also on WTIC AM 1080 radio. And she has a diverse list of clientele, Fortune 500 corporations, government, universities, for-profit, non-profit organizations, and she's kind of everywhere all the time, and she's known very well here. She used to be an NBC anchor on TV, and everyone knows her and respects her. So, and she has a specialization that can help crime victims, I think, crisis management, and we're anxious to hear about that. So welcome, Ann. Thank you so much for being on Shattered Lives.
Well, thank you so much, Donna and Delilah. I felt like after I haven't heard Cheyenne, Wyoming for a while, I almost wanted to go, yee-haw!
I almost did that, too.
So it's great to be on the program. And before we get started, I just want to say that, you know, my thoughts and prayers, too, with your friend and colleague, Susan, as well. And I think she's so fortunate to have your support and to have you right there, Delilah. So I don't know her, but I know that if you two have anything to do with it, she'll be back on her feet before you know it.
Oh,
no
thank
doubt.
You.
Thank you.
That's very nice of you to say, you know. Let's see. Well, there's so many things we can talk about here, Ann. I wondered if maybe we could start out by talking about the fact that you've had such a varied career in TV and radio and your own media consulting business. Do you think over time, I'm wondering how has your perspective changed or evolved regarding the plight of crime victims now as compared to when you were a regular on TV and radio formats? Has it evolved? Has it changed? And can you tell us, you know, how you felt then versus now?
Absolutely. Well, you know, when I started in media, you know, years ago, I mean, that was my major in college, speech and theater arts. I wanted to be a reporter, and I started out in radio. Still love radio. It's my favorite. And then, you know, worked my way up. That's how it works in the broadcasting business. You start in the really small market, smaller towns, not as many viewers. And then your goal is, if you want to survive and be able to, you know, eat, you try to move up in market size, and thus the income rises. But, you know, to that point, so doesn't the competition, because to get to these bigger markets, you're up against other people who want to work in the same place that you do. So when you're in a market, and let's use the market where I ended up, Hartford, Connecticut, the last market that I worked in television news in, and here I was a news anchor and reporter. So on the weekends, I was actually sitting behind the anchor desk, and then during the week, 3 days, I would be out covering stories that were given to me, saying, here, you know, go find out what this is about and bring it back to us. So that was my job. But in this market, and I worked for the NBC affiliate, you know, you're up against the other affiliates. You're up against the CBS, the ABC, the Fox. I mean, today it's even a lot more competitive because of the social media outlets and the 24-hour news cycle, which, you know, has evolved over the course of time. So for me, when I was out there, you know, I had a different perspective. I've never been, as a person, much of a puppet. Don't do real well with direction and being told what to do. So in my role as a reporter, it was hard for me because when I went out there, I was the one that saw the story. I was the one that saw the faces of the victims, that saw the faces of the criminals, that saw the faces of the defense attorneys. And then I'd put that story together and I would bring it back to the viewers. Now, that was my job. I was the one out there. But unfortunately, the way that it worked, and I'm going to speak from my experience, and I'm not looking to cast a dark shadow over every reporter out there because they're not all bad. But in my experience, it never was what I perceived it to be. It was always what somebody sitting back, you know, at the TV station wanted it to be for ratings purposes. And I had a real problem with that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I can give you one of the last days, people say, oh, don't you miss it? Don't you miss being on the news? Don't you miss this? And some days I do, but for the most part I don't, because I tell people I feel like I jumped off of a sinking ship. And the reason I say that, this is the absolute truth. One day towards the end of my career at the NBC affiliate in Hartford, they sent me out. The first thing was they sent me to the beach. A child had drowned while in the care of his nanny. Awful, wow. Tragic, ugh. As you can imagine.
Yes.
So we get there. The nanny is hysterical. They're still searching for the little boy's body. The mother shows up, obviously hysterical. And I was just, you know, I think at the time I had at least one small child, if not two, and as a human being, you know,
Of course. And
awful.
You're standing at the edge of the water waiting for the opportune moment to talk to somebody while they're in pain?
No, that's the difference in this business. You don't wait for the opportunity to talk to somebody. You look for the opportunity, as they would call it, to shove a microphone in somebody's face in the midst of such a tragedy, which I had to do. And when I called back to the station, I said, you know, we've got the mother on camera. She's hysterical. They were like, good job.
Good job.
The answer that I...
That's just so, I don't know, it's just so wrong. It's so wrong-headed. It's so insensitive and all of that. So by you doing that was a good job. And what was your response?
Well, it wasn't over yet. I mean, my day had just started. Remember that. I'm talking about three things in one day. That's one.
This is the first, right.
That's number one. That was early in the morning. Okay, then they send me a father and son had gotten hit by a wrong-way driver. They sent me to the mother's house to knock on her door. Now, can you imagine?
No.
And so some people listening to this program would say, well, Ann, let me ask you, why would you do that? Why would you even consider doing that? Because you know what? If I didn't do it and the other people from the other affiliates did it, and for some reason, and you never knew who was going to talk to you or who wasn't, they got an interview with somebody, I'm in trouble. I'm called into the office and I'm in trouble.
Because CBS.
So that was number two.
Did you actually
then number
go
three,
there?
I did. I actually went there. She opened the door, screamed and yelled, called me every name that you can even imagine, and I deserved each and every one of them, then some.
Right.
Then they sent me over. It made national news. There was a gentleman who worked for ESPN who drowned in his neighbor's backyard pool.
Mm-hmm.
So then they send me over there to go to the neighborhood to find out, because we didn't know, nobody knew for exactly what had happened. You know, some of this stuff is worth looking into, but some of it is just, it's voyeurism. It's just, it's awful.
Yeah.
So I go over there, and the beauty of this one, and this is one of the stories that I'm pretty proud of. They lived on a cul-de-sac, and all the news reporters from the various stations, we were all at the end of the cul-de-sac going, can you believe we have to drive down there and do this? This is awful. So you know what we did? We made a pact. We said, let's all go back and tell our bosses that they told us to get the hell off the property and leave. And let's not even go. You know it? And we did it.
You did?
We did it.
Wow.
Nobody got the interview. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, you know, that's one way. Just, you know, avoid the whole thing, I guess. I don't know. You know, to have to do that is just, you know, you go home and how can you live with yourself having to do that type of job? So that's where I imagine you probably questioned yourself and, you know, your integrity. Or is this really worth it? Is that the moral of the story?
It is, you know, and it's not only that, but, you know, and especially as I became a mother and I had children, and I'm sitting there and I'm looking at, you know, I'm looking at the faces of people. They're like, I'm going to impact their life tonight. I'm going to tell people who get their news, and there are a lot of people that just get their news from a 30-second soundbite that somebody like me goes out and gets during the day. Unfortunately,
right.
That's the extent of the research that they do on a particular story. I couldn't do it anymore. So you know what I did is I was pushed towards a door for that reason, partially my own, you know, wanting to leave. But the other part was, frankly, I was pushed towards the door. I was getting older. I was in my 30s.
Right.
There were younger, blonder chicks that were willing to work for less money than me.
Uh-huh.
And so I said, what can I do with this? What can I really do with the skills that I've built over the past several years and what I've observed? And I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go out and help people deal with the media as it is today. And now, 20 years later, you guys, I've been doing this now for 20 years later, I feel so good about the transition that I've made, the people that I can help. You know, for example, just this past Friday, Connecticut Humane Society is one of my clients, and we had a guy who won the Mighty Dog competition. He's this big, good-looking young guy. He's got this little bitty, cute little Yorkie. And anyway, to make a long story short, one of the things that he won was a year's supply of dog food, which he donated back to the Connecticut Humane Food Pantry. And then people came on Friday that can't afford to feed their pets, you know, temporarily or for whatever reason, to get support. And, you know, and the media showed up. I got the media there. And that takes work because you know why? It's a good story. It's a good feeling, good news story. And those are so hard to get people to cover.
Tell me about it. When we did my big event at the State Capitol, and they never, year after year, you saw it, they never show up because they think a feel-good story about blind people making accomplishments, oh, that's not news.
Well, Delilah and Donna, you know what our motto was in the newsroom? If it bleeds, it leads.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that one. I've heard one several times. Well, don't you think, you know, not to throw around names or anything, but I will, the whole Nancy Grace style, you know, the news stations now, it's just a matter of, you know, you have a host up there that's almost mean sometimes, although, you know, I give her credit. Nancy does some great things, some very good things for people, and I do give her credit for the good things she does. However, the style is what I'm talking about. You have so-called experts that get on the show for their two-minute soundbite, which generally does nothing for their, you know, to further their career, but yet everybody's clamoring to get on these shows. What do you think about that, Ann?
Well, you know, I agree, and one thing you don't ever want to do is sit and watch TV with me because I go nuts. I go absolutely nuts. And I've got to tell you, and I'm not just saying this because I'm on this program, because I'm on the Shattered Lives program today, but this today, this forum, this format, talk radio, giving people, including yourselves, an opportunity to speak in more than a 10-second soundbite and or a one-minute sentence that gets cut, more importantly, into a 10-second soundbite. That's what needs to – that we need more of this, but there isn't enough of it.
Right.
There isn't enough of it.
I totally agree. There's so many shows that deal with, even on the Internet, in terms of talking about the perpetrator and the crime and the details of the crime. And when we conceived of this last October on a cruise ship, myself and a PI and some true crime authors, we said, you know what, we think we might have a winning formula here. And then we presented it to Delilah and Susan and all of that, and they said, you know, this might really be a good show. And, you know, so once you get a winning formula that's a public service, I think, and like I say, I have shows lined up all the way to the end of October now, Ann. So it says something about, you know, people really want this type of show. They want the information. They want the resources. They want experts such as yourself talking about things that you know about. You know, so I don't know. I don't know what you say about Nancy Grace, because I think she's evolved into something very different than what she started out to be. And, you know, I don't know. That's the way entertainment TV is right now. And it is entertainment. It's not really informational as far as I'm concerned.
They teach you how to speak differently. They teach you how to use words to, you know, take the situation and make it 10 times worse. You know, your claws always have to be out when you work in the news business, in the newsroom. And it does. They do make you change your personality. I mean, people used to think that I was a pit bull, you know, as a person. But that's mm-hmm. the way I had to be. It was survival, really. You know, it was my survival as far as my profession went, and it's not fun. And I find now I still have that little bit of an edge that comes out in me, but I'm a much calmer, and I think, I don't know, we'd have to survey this, but nicer person than I used to be. Because I truly do care about people, and I do have a soft spot. I'll never forget one time when I was anchoring the news. I had done a story on a little girl that was from Newington, Connecticut, who needed a bone marrow transplant. She was very, very ill. And anyway, they finally found a match for her. And so we followed the story. We just, you know, and there was some sort of a connection that I formed with this family, and I was going to birthday parties and family events. I got very close.
Nice.
And then I was, one weekend, I got the call that she had passed away. She was 7 at the time. And I had to announce it on the news that night. And the news is live in that situation, and I lost it. I just started crying. I had to toss it to a break. And mm-hmm. you know, people, the we didn't have email and Facebook and all, or we had some email, but you know, the feedback that I got from the viewers was, oh, it's, you know, I felt so badly for you, and I'm so sorry, and thanks for being a real person. You know mm-hmm. what kind of feedback I got from my boss?
Oh, they probably were not pleased.
Don't ever do that again. Really?
Oh.
Don't ever do that again.
Mm-hmm. Don't ever show your emotions. And that's exactly the same way, the demeanor that we have to have. When I went through the trial of, you know, my father's homicide, you cannot, you know, you have to be poker-faced the entire time. And so it's, you know, I don't know. I just get so frustrated with, we're human beings, no matter what it is we do for a living or what we have to do to survive. And we should show our emotion, you know. But
We should. But you know, and we don't really get to see what's really going on. And I'll go back to your example of especially crime victims. You know, I've had some involvement over the course of time with Dr. Pettit and the Pettit Family
right.
Foundation. And for those listeners out there who may not be aware, his wife and his two daughters, Haley and Michaela, were all three murdered in a home invasion in Cheshire, Connecticut, back in 2007. Horrible, horrific, horrific crime. He was also beaten, but was the only survivor of that. So two guys, I can't call them anything other than guys. I can't call them other things, but I won't on this show. So
animals.
Anyway, animals, thank you. That's a good word.
They
thank you. I've been
looking
humane
for society.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah. Vicious, useless animals in this case were arrested and both sentenced. But the bottom line is, and what really gave me a real eye-opener here was, as I sat in the courtroom through some of those proceedings, you know, to the Pettit family, not as a reporter now,
right.
but as someone who felt, you know, an allegiance, an alliance, and respect, right, for the family.
Yeah.
It was a whole different perspective. And you talk about having to hold your emotions back. That, you know,
mm-hmm.
I didn't know Dr. Pettit and his family prior to this tragic situation. I didn't. But
right.
as I sat there, and the only ones that made me sicker to my stomach than the actual perpetrators themselves were the defense attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about how people can go to sleep at night, how people can live with themselves, how people can pride themselves in the fact that that's what they do for a living. I can't imagine it.
Right. You're talking about, on the one hand, getting the story at all costs, where your news manager saying, I don't care what, you have to be cutthroat. And it's kind of the same mentality with the defense attorneys. You know, I don't understand it, but, you know, that kind of may dovetail nicely into, is this an example of crisis management? Like, okay, you were there as a supporter for Dr. Pettit, and then you met him. Did you help him with respect to dealing with the media? And how do you, can you talk a bit about what you do in terms of crisis management in a situation like this? Because it was national. People here, you know, are familiar with it. He's hounded forever, and, you know, it took several years for both trials to come to an end. So
how do you deal with that and, you know, field all of the requests and, you know, people being intrusive, et cetera?
Well, the majority of the media inquiries were handled by his good personal friend and his attorney, Rick Healy. But
okay. When
I was down in the courtroom, you know, there was a, you know, as you can imagine, everybody from Dateline to Inside Edition, national, international media. I mean, depending on what was happening and what was going on in the courtroom that particular day, I mean, everybody was there. Now, one day in particular, it was just a mob scene outside. And I remember I did suggest to Dr. Pettay, I said, you know, today is a day that I think you really should make some sort of a statement if you can. You know, and I talked to him and his attorney. So they agreed. We kind of went over, you know, he went over what he wanted to say. I went outside and I said to the news media, I said, here's the deal. Dr. Pettit is going to come out here. He's going to make a brief statement because it just calms them down. It gives them something. I understand
right.
that. You've got to go back with a story. There's a black hole to fill in that newscast. You need to have that filled, and I get that part of it. So I'm not a brick wall for the media. I'm just trying to make sure everybody understands everybody's roles. I said, so
right.
here's
sure
the deal. He'll come
mediator.
Out and make a statement,
right.
and then let's leave it at that, and please give him and his family the respect and dignity to walk to their cars without 15 photographers stumbling over the sidewalk backwards trying to get pictures of them. And I said, and no questions. Do you all agree to that? If you do, he'll be out here to do that. If you don't, he won't. And they all said, yes, we agree. And
mm-hmm.
you know, I have never seen such a large group of reporters respect what they said they were going to do. Not one of them crossed the line and did anything differently. So in that case, you know, it's really fortunate that, you know, people in high-profile cases have someone that helps them get through that. I think too many people think that the media is just going to go away, that, if we just ignore this or if we don't say anything or if we say no comment, which is the worst thing you can do, that this will all just go away. And it doesn't. You know, if it's news, it's news, and it's going to get covered. And guess what? If they don't talk to you, they're going to talk to someone else. So, you know, I sometimes feel like, especially when I see these horrific crimes, and I want to call these people up and say, do you need some help? You know, do you need someone to help you manage this so that you can focus on other things and get this part of this as far away from you as you possibly can? And
right.
people do appreciate that, but I don't want to be an ambulance chaser either.
Right, I understand that. So how do you somehow try to get a message to them and see at a certain point in time when they're dealing with so many variables, do they say, yes, it would be very helpful to have a media representative? How
well,
do you get to them politely, respectfully?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been word of mouth. You know, a lot of you know, I've been in this business now with Baldwin Media and my own firm now for 20 years. And
right.
the crisis communication is across the board. It's not just for crime victims. It's for
right.
everybody. I do a lot of work with school systems. So if I see something unfolding and it looks like the person who is at the helm of this thing isn't handling it well or could be doing things differently, sometimes I'll place that call and say, look, I just want you to know this is who I am. Here's my website. You know, if you need some help, if you feel you could use that added, you know, background of somebody who's been on the other side of that microphone shoving it in people's faces,
right.
feel free to call me. Sometimes, you know what I do? I just give people, you know, a couple of pieces of advice. You know, no charge. Here's what I think you should do or here's what I think you're doing wrong. You know, really, there's nothing in that for me other than I want to help you.
Right. Well, tell us, now that you've intrigued me with the no comment, why is that the worst thing? Because it just kind of feeds the frenzy and they keep going at you?
Well, if you think about those two words together, and when you hear someone say no comment, what's your first impression?
Well, a negative. But, you know,
negative, guilty, something to hide.
Right.
So there are ways of saying something without really saying anything. So someone asks you a question, and you really want to say no.
Give us an example.
Okay,
yeah,
I'm going to.
Give us an example.
All right, so someone asks you a question that you really don't want to answer, or maybe for some reason because it might impact the investigation, because you've been told that you can't speak to certain details, then here's what you say. And so they'll say, what happened? I can't speak to the details of exactly what happened, but what I can tell you is that we're working closely with investigators around the clock so that we can talk about details and so that we can get to the bottom of this situation.
Okay.
Whatever it might be. You know, so you're saying something without really saying anything.
Right.
You know, I can't speak to this right now, but what I can tell you is get out, here's the problem. problem that most people make when it comes to dealing with the media is that you have some reporters out there asking questions that they want to, one, get some sort of a reaction out of you. And you talk about Nancy Grace. You talk about Bill O'Reilly. They're pushing, if you watch it, they're pushing buttons. They're poking until people get crazy mad, and that's what brings up the ratings, and that's why people watch.
Right.
Okay, so the first thing is you got to keep an even temperament. And if you're too close to a situation or you're too close to a tragedy or you're too close to somebody who's involved, then you shouldn't even be speaking to the press. Find somebody else to do it.
Like a family spokesperson or something? Yeah.
Well, you got to really take it on a case-by-case basis, because sometimes it's most appropriate. Like I've seen, you know, heads of major corporations saying, well, have our spokesperson do it, or you be our spokesperson, Ann. Guess what? This isn't my company. I'm not the one accused of, you know, taking millions of dollars from clients. I mean, that's your job. You
right.
know, you're the face of this thing. There's got to be a voice and a face to it. So everything is on a case-by-case basis. But maybe it's a family member. Maybe it's, you know, a family friend who is articulate and can, more importantly, control the media. Because, you know, regardless of what the media asks you, you have to get, when you get in front of an interview or when you get on the phone with a reporter or you're responding to somebody on a you know, website, you have to have your key messages. What information do you want to get out to the public? Regardless of what they're asking you, you don't have to fall victim, speaking of victims, to their questions.
Mm-hmm.
You really don't.
Yeah, you don't have to have that frame of mind that you are being re-victimized.
Right. And, you know, Delilah, you'll probably appreciate this as someone with such a strong background in social media. If we can, just, you know, back up to the Pettit situation. You know, it was hard enough, I think, for him to, you know, get through the media piece of this. And I'm not saying he's through with it. I mean, the media is still on this thing every day. But you know what really was disturbing to me, too, is where we're at with social media. So, for example, let's say our New Haven Register would write an article on what happened in court that day. And then, you know, readers can put in their comments. Anybody, you don't know who these people are, can say whatever they want. And, boy, they do.
They do.
Oh, they do. They do. And, you know, and I'm sure you agree, Anne, there's a lot of clients that end up with a negative comments coming into their blogs or in whatever they're doing. You're going to get some negativity somewhere, and I think the best way to deal with it, in my opinion, is to ignore it. It's going to happen. What better way is there from your perspective? What have you run into, and how have you advised your clients to handle the negativity that's thrown at them?
To your point, exactly, I've had to say to a few folks, look, don't read it. Don't read it, because it's just, you know, again, it's this vocal minority. It's these people that don't have the nerve to identify themselves and say whatever they want. I mean, you should, some of the things, the horrifying things that they said, you know, about Dr. Pettit and every day, all mm-hmm. the time. And, you know, these people have nothing better to do. So that's one. But I've also done this, too. I've also, in one circumstance, again, with this particular situation, I actually called the webmaster at the publication and said, are you reading these blogs? Are you reading these comments?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any filter? Do you have any conscience? Do you have any scruples at this publication whatsoever? Yeah, you know, and it's all that, well, freedom of speech thing. That's
yeah.
what I throw at you.
So, but, in other words, it's just they're there to put it up and you know, whatever hits and sticks the wall stays there, and they're saying their job is not to read and edit, it's just to put it up there.
Well, I tell you what, I appealed to this particular webmaster as a human being. I said,
mm-hmm.
I talked to him for probably 15 minutes,
mm-hmm.
and he said, no, they won't let me. Then, you know what, I got a call back, and he said, I just want to tell you, between you and I spent my lunch break taking down some of those comments.
All right.
So, you know, it was great. I mean, only in extreme circumstances would I even do that, because this stuff's going to go on. You can't control it. You can't stop it. It's never going to happen, and it's only going to get worse.
Mm-hmm.
But,
well,
you know, that's the other thing as a reporter. You know, sometimes people would look at me and say, because you get there, you're all fired up, you're on a deadline, you've got to get what you got to get, you got to get back to the station, you got so much you have to get done in such a short period of time. Sometimes people would stop me and look me in the eyes and say, Ann, hang on a second, do you understand what we're dealing with here? Please, you know, just remember who you are and remember that we're all humans. I had that said to me a couple of times, and I needed that.
Mm-hmm. To kind of put you in check, and, you know, you're not this machine to get the story at all costs. You got to, you know, take a step back.
Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing for, you know, your listeners that have been in a situation, you know, a crime situation, you don't know where these reporters are getting their information. And the other thing that I want people to be aware of is that if there's a reporter in your presence, if there's a reporter within an earshot or a camera shot of you, you're on the record. So you might be standing in the ladies' room and your friend's in the stall and you're having a conversation and you think nobody's listening. Guess what? It's all fair game.
Right.
So you have to be so careful. You might be standing in line at the supermarket and talking to your neighbor. It's all on the record. It's all part of the equation. So you have to be so, so careful who you talk to, what you say. Your guard's always got to be up, especially when you're in a situation that what people say you said could have an impact on the outcome,
right,
let's say, of a conviction.
Right, and the Freedom of Information Act, too. I mean, everything, even that we write, I, you know, as sort of a case manager, I write notes of my clients every day. I take phone calls, and all of that, you have to be very careful because they can just do, you know, mm-hmm. Freedom of Information, and it's there forever, and it's like, oh, my God. Why did I say that? Or I should have said it this way. So, you know, I don't know. We have to check ourselves, but yet the dichotomy is we're freedom of speech, but yet we have to check ourselves in these situations.
You're right. Well, and, you know, Donnie, FOI request. I mean, if I could tell you the school systems that I deal with, I mean, you know, it's just amazing the time and energy and wasted, you know, resources that go into situations in school systems. And that, you know, that make it into the media. And the FOI request, the time, the expense that goes into that,
yeah,
it's just mind-boggling. It really is. But you bring up a really good point. Whatever it is, whatever you have on your computer, whatever you've sent an email, whatever you've written, whatever you've said, it's all fair game.
Right. And I think a lot of people, especially that don't work in those environments, they're not aware of that. They think it's, oh, it's my computer and who cares? But no, if you work for a business, no, they kind of drill that into us as state government. You have to be very careful. And mm-hmm. even to put your paperwork away and lock it up. And, you know, because if there's a paper on the desk and someone happens to see that Johnny Jones lives on Main Street and it was sitting on your desk, oh, my God, then you're in hot water because that should have been locked up in a drawer.
Right, right.
You know, those kind
yeah,
of things.
We all talked, you know, before we started the show today, too, about, you know, the victims being re-victimized. And yeah. I see that happening so much in our media today. And I feel my heart just goes out to these people because they are re-victimized. And you know what else is interesting, too? How many times have you ever seen a story, unless it's a big national or high-profile case, where there's ever any follow-up, where there's ever any closure?
Right. Well, that's what this show is about, to tell about the follow-up. And we don't know about closure because we don't really think as homicide survivors, especially, that there is closure. There might be some resolution. I don't know if we're just talking semantics here. But I totally agree with you. And that's what this show is about, because we want to know what happened, you know, after Peter Caron's homicide, you know, all those years ago, and how is your family coping now, and what can we do to help? And oh, by the way, Ian, if I encounter a bunch of colleagues that are also crime victims, can you help them if they have a specific question or if they need some advice? Are you open to say, yeah, give me a call or whatever?
Well, you know, I have to be careful when asked that question because
okay.
it just depends. Like, for example, the Connecticut Association of Boards of Education, which covers all the boards for all the school systems in Connecticut, the majority of them, they're my clients. So if there's a school superintendent or there's somebody within the school and they have a question, and I can answer it or give them some strategic advice, you know, and I am available to do that, absolutely. I mean, I'm more than happy to do that. You know, it just depends on how detailed. Sometimes you can't help people with one little piece of advice. Sometimes you got to say, look, yes, I can help you. And this is not about, you know, making a buck, maybe a little bit about that. But, you know, it's about, it's got to be an ongoing strategy. And here's the biggest mistake that people make when it comes to dealing with the press. They wait until it's already out of control. Sometimes in situations, if you were only proactive with your communication, if you got out in front of it, instead of waiting until now you're reacting to it, it can make the situation a whole lot easier.
Right. So what would you do if you're just, you know, an average citizen and something happens in your life, some event, and, you know, you don't know how to handle it, but you end up trying to do the best you can. And like you say, you wait till it's crisis proportion or something. So as to prevent that, Anne, what would you give for advice if there's some type of crisis or event that needs some expertise? What should they do in the beginning, or how do they recognize that? Hey, we need to call somebody like Anne or some expert. Are they too caught up in their emotion to recognize that?
Well, I can't speak for where they're coming from. Again, I think it goes back to something that I said earlier, and that people think it'll just go away.
Uh-huh.
Or they think it's a story that, oh, the media is not going to care about this. This isn't going to be any big deal. And, you know, sometimes the littlest things turn into the biggest stories. And the other thing is, sometimes the biggest tragedies happen in places that we never expect them to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know that old saying, it'll never happen here?
Right.
So,
well, it has.
You know... And it has. You're right, Delilah. So it's just figuring out. It's like anything else. If you're sick, you go to a doctor. If you're having tax trouble, you go find an expert. You need to find somebody who has a background and has an expertise in that. Now, you know, for me, if I had a situation, I turn to people like Delilah, because the social media stuff is just as important as the mainstream media, if not more important today.
I totally agree. And she's a master.
So while my background is really traditional media, I mean, I don't know it all either. I go to someone like a Delilah. I go to someone who, you know, I have a gal in my office. What she does is she just sits there, and I don't even know all the terminology, but she sits there and just, you know, observes tweets, and she'll see what the news media is tweeting about. And she knows things before I know things. She knows when to post things. Right, Delilah? I mean, that's what you got to do, is stay on top of it.
Right, you're absolutely right, and you don't want to miss a beat when you're in a business like that. But you know, how would someone, let's say, just hypothetically, if someone was a victim of a crime or there's something going on in a small town, just like, you know, we look at the Kaylee Anthony case, how does the case like that become so huge and so totally out of control? And, you know, like you said earlier, most people wait until it is out of control before they get in touch with someone like you to get it back where it should be. But, you know, if you are the victim or you are the survivor, whatever, how do you know that it's going to hit you that hard?
Well, here's what usually happens is that, you know, it starts with, you know, one reporter doing a story. It could be your hometown radio station. It can be your hometown newspaper. If it turns into an Associated Press report, it then can go across the country. Then the networks pick it up. So anybody that knows anything about media, and that should be pretty much everybody, should be able to realize when it's starting to snowball, when it's no longer your little bitty AM radio station in, you know, rural Iowa calling you, all of a sudden it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. That's when you know it's probably going to take on something much more than you can personally or will want to deal with.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Does that
make
sense?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's confusing to me how some of these cases, like you talked earlier, just explode, and others that you would think really need the media attention, like working with missing persons organizations, I see that is what they beg for. They beg to have the information out there in the media as much as possible. And of course, if that were the case, then there would be nothing else on the news. But you know, there again, you get into the thing: who's picking and choosing? Who's picking and choosing which story or which missing person or victim that makes it to the air, and the other ones are left behind?
You know where I think that comes from? I think that's coming from having a media professional probably pushing it in front of the right people. I mean, that's what I have to do on behalf of my clients every day. That's what I live and breathe 24 hours, 7 days a week. Because I've got to find the right producer. I've got to find the right person that's going to say, hey, I like the story. Oh, yeah. Oh, that sounds good. You know, when you talk about, you like, I love America's Most Wanted. I love to watch a show. And now here they go and they took that off the air for the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, advertisers don't want to spend, you know, dollars like that. Like you talked about the show here, you know, Shattered Lives. Great program. And it's great information. But, you know, where are the big companies and the big corporations saying, I want to sponsor this program so you can keep it going and you can make a living getting out this great information? Where are those people?
From your
exactly.
lips to God's ear. Yes,
right.
Ian.
I know. You know what? Shame on them. You know, shame on them for not realizing that this is good, useful information. And every forum and every piece of communication starts somewhere.
And I have to tell you that I've written 3 or 4 times and called a particular Hartford Current crime beat person to feature an article on the missing, because like Delilah said, we're very involved with Q Center for the Missing and some other organizations. There's thousands of people that go missing, and we're very invested in that, and you can't get anybody to pay attention to it. So
no.
you're right. We need your help. We need to get this out in the forefront. You're so right. You know, it's so important, and we're trying the best we can, and, you know, we've got the handle on the social media and whatnot, but, you know, we can't do it, you know, all by ourselves. We need other people, other professionals like you to say, hey, go and look over here, because this is where the real stories are. And
well, Donna, and the other thing, the other thing is, though, you know, there are dwindling resources. I mean, look at what's happened. You know, you're from this area. Look what's happened right here in Hartford. You know, the Hartford Current has pretty much laid everybody off. So the resources aren't there. But here's the beauty of it. With social media, you can now run your own show like you're doing now. You can write your own pieces and put them on Facebook. You can get your own. You can write your own articles and submit them for publication, because they don't. First of all, they don't have people that even write anymore in most of these publications,
right. Well,
and they're dying for content.
Right. That's what I do. You know, it's what
right.
I do here, and we're trying to get it out there to the world and get other people to pay attention, and that's part of it. So, yeah, I think I know I'm on the right track, and it's just getting it out there to the right people and the right people paying attention and saying, hey, we want to do something on a larger scale. That's all mm-hmm. about, I think, all of Delilah's clients, because there's so many good people in her company that has so much to offer, and it's just giving them that voice. And we give, you know, other crime victims a voice if they can't do it themselves, but she gives us a voice, and that's what's so good about companies like yourself and Imagine Publicity. And, you know, I will praise you all to the hilt, because that's how we make progress in life, and we change the world one person at a time, you know?
Right,
but,
right.
I'm wondering, we've got about 12 and a half minutes left here. The time is flying by when we're having fun here and learning. In terms of knowing how the media has changed and evolved, is there any hope for are we destined to have it all, sound bites and all about entertainment? Could we ever go back to the days of Walter Cronkite, you know, the hard news, that this is really what news is about? It's not about what so-and-so Hollywood movie star, you know, got arrested for drunk driving, who cares? I mean, can we ever go back to those days of important news versus entertainment news? And how do we get people to pay attention, to take things seriously?
Well, my personal opinion and answer to that question is no, because you know what we're doing. We're conditioning younger generations. and they're being conditioned to expect the entertainment, to expect the sound bites, to expect instantaneous, you know, information. And where does that information come from? Nobody asks that anymore. There's no questioning. There's no credibility anymore. If we see something that pops up on, you know, AOL's homepage, it's fact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where did it come from? Nobody cares. They just start talking about it and buzzing about it. So no, I don't think it can. So this is where, you know, what I tell my clients, because everyone's like, oh my God, we're going down the tubes. You know, the world's coming to an end. You can look at it that way, or you can look at it from the perspective of, okay, this is the way it's going to be, so how do you try to counter that? You build a Facebook page and stay out there on behalf of your organization. You make sure that you tweet on behalf of what's going on with you and your organization. You stay out there wherever you can, and you never know who's listening, watching your message. So that's how we're going to communicate. I really do believe that. And whenever you have an opportunity, you know, mm-hmm. to get out there and really speak uninterrupted, unedited, unfiltered, take it. And I don't care where it's at, how many people are watching. Sometimes, you know what, it's not always quantity, it's quality.
Right. You're so right. You're sounding just like Delilah when she says, you never know when that right person is going to pop up or is going to see your information. So this just validates everything that I've been hearing, and it's so good to hear it from another person as well. So, you know, it does my heart good to hear these things. I'm wondering,
even your situation, and I think Anne can even speak to this, and looking for another position, that has all changed, not just news. It's what, like she said, it's what's on your Facebook, it's what's on your blog, it's what's on your website. That's where employers go now. So,
right.
You know, that's why we try to create the best image and get it out there. And
right.
So hopefully we can make a match.
Yeah. Well, that's what it's about, and that's what we're trying to do. And we just got to keep plugging. I believe it's going to happen. And along the way, my mission is to, you know, I think my life mission is to help other people in this way. I've never felt stronger about anything in my life. You know, who cares about the 55 surgeries? The fact that that's all gone and done. This is now. And even though I've had my homicide 31 years ago. Like Dwayne Bauer said, it's a very healthy thing to continue on in this way. You're not in your grieving, acute grieving stage, and you can get out of that and help other people in very healthy ways. And I just really think that if people have the call to do that and they have other professionals around them to help, then, hey, it's a good life. It really is.
And to your point, Donna, I think it's a lot like recovery, and I can speak to that. And it's you know, you never completely heal from it, but if you can take your strength and share it, the hope and strength with others, that's really what it's all about. And I think recovery, I can't speak from a homicide, but any type of recovery, you know, if that's your mission and that's what your goal and objectives are, and you can live each day saying that, you know, I've done that, I'm helping people, I'm helping victims, I'm helping people who are hurting, then,
right.
You know, then life is good, if you ask me.
Yeah, well, you know, I think we're preaching to the choir here. We're all singing the same tune, and hopefully we can continue to do that in our own small way. And you can't think that you're going to conquer the world overnight. And you know, even, you know, one person at a time. I had a week where a couple of very significant things happened when I attended a crime victim conference recently at Central, the Sam and Wanda Rieger, and I can't tell you what, you know, how heartening that was to say, yes, this is what we have to keep doing. This is what we need to do. But, you know, in the last few minutes, I'm wondering also, Anne, I want to skip over a little bit to your, I know you do media training, and are you, when you do that, are you working with students who are just coming out of college to be reporters or media people, or are there people from corporations in their communications department? Who are you serving when you're doing media training what are the requests like in that realm?
It's pretty much across the board. I've worked with, you know, heads of major corporations. I've worked with, and sometimes, you know, it's a formal training where they'll fly me out and they'll have, you know, associations that say, look, you know, we're doing this, you know, weekend workshop. We want you to be part of that. Here's 50 people. So that I can even, it's not just about media training and the soundbite. It's how, like we've been talking about a lot in this conversation, how do you get your message out there? How do you cut through the media clutter? How do you get to the top of the heap? And once you get there, don't blow your opportunity, because guess what? If you do, you're never going back again.
Right.
So it's really across the board. I mean, I've worked with the American Cancer Society, again, a lot of nonprofits. So it's different. Now, when I was at the Connecticut Humane Society, I was media training this guy that won the Mighty Dog competition to make sure he said the right thing right on the spot. So make sure that we're talking about, yes, we're giving food out to people who need it, but also mention that if you're out there and you've got something you would like to donate, you know, this is exactly the reason why you can do this, and here's how you can help us. I mean, what is your call to action? Why are you doing an interview in the first place? What do you want to change? What do you want to see happen? You know, too many people just speak without having a real purpose. What's your purpose? What's your reason? It's not because you want to be on TV or radio or quoted in the newspaper. Chances are that's not fun. So what is it you want to accomplish? That's got to be at the front of your mind when you do an interview, before you do an interview.
You have to have a plan, like you say, that. And in terms of, I know when I was looking at the narrative and your download on this, handling the tough questions, is it? Can you give a couple of examples of, I mean, if you have a scenario, tough questions versus, you know, routine questions, would it be, again, sort of a generic answer, answering them but not answering them?
Well, what, you know, the thing is, and again, I talked about this earlier, is, you know, reporters will try to push your buttons. They want to get an emotional reaction, whatever that might be in the particular situation. So the best thing you can do is just keep that even temperament. You know, don't get your back up. Don't get angry. Don't shout. Don't yell. Because think about it. When you read a newspaper, you don't know what's going on during that process. When you see a newscast, you don't see you don't hear the reporter's questions usually. You just see the response from the person they're interviewing, and that's what you're judging the story on. So you have to keep that even temperament and don't get your back up. And as much as you want to go crazy, you know, it's almost like you have to diffuse the situation. It's like road rage. You know, if somebody wants to get crazy with you driving down the highway and you turn over and just smile at them, sometimes they're like, it lets the air out of their cloud there. You know, so it's just every situation, how you handle it, and putting yourself in a situation where, or if a reporter asks you a question, sometimes they don't even know what questions they're asking. They're told to go ask questions, and they don't know. And you can just say to them, yeah, that's really not an appropriate question, and that's not the reason that I agreed to this interview. What I'm here to talk about is blah.
That's good, because people think, well, the microphone's there, I guess I have to say something, and you're not obligated.
No.
Right?
No, you're not.
You're not.
They're there because they need some information from you, and you control the situation. And they'll try to rush right into the interview sometimes, and you say, hang on a second, before the camera's on, before you put a microphone on me, I want to be clear on what it is I've agreed to talk to you about and make sure that we stick to that, otherwise this thing's not happening.
Yeah, the ground rules you talked about, right?
Set the ground rules and stick to them. Stick to them.
Well,
absolutely.
You know, that's very good advice. So in our parting time here, do you have some words of wisdom for us in general before we close out?
Well, you know, you talked about it too. You know, we've got our website. It's Baldwin Media, and we've got a great Facebook page where you can see some of our clients in action, some of the interviews that some of our clients have done. And you know what? This doesn't happen easily. There's a lot of work, a lot of energy, a lot of, you know, outreach that goes into getting and securing an interview. And, you know, for people out there, I just say, don't give up. Don't feel like nobody cares, because, you know, to what you said, Delilah said before, you're going to run into that one person that does care. You just have to find the right person, the right venue, and you have to give them the right story. You know, if it's, you know, people say, oh, I can't believe, you know, we had a popsicle sale and nobody covered the media never covered it.
Right.
You know, sorry, folks, but let's be realistic. You also have to be realistic.
That's true. Well, again, thank you so much for your pearls of wisdom here. I think it's been very informational. we will be writing up a detailed blog to have posted tomorrow and be available for the masses in the not-too-distant future. And I hope that you will stay in touch with me, because I think we have a lot of commonalities, you and Delilah and I, and all of us doing good work. And I thank you so much for being our guest this evening. And everyone, please remember to tune in next week. And when it comes to helping survivors of crime, don't just try. Make it happen. Thank you. Thank you, Delilah. Thank you, Ann. We'll see you next week, everyone. Stay safe, and good evening.